have 60 seconds to comply.
I think you'd better do what he says, Mr. Kenny.
You have 60 seconds to comply. This is Minute 34. Part man.
Part machine.
All pod.
This minute begins with the convenience store robber saying, "Open the safe, Pops," and ends with, "I'd buy that for a dollar."
The worst hidden safe ever.
I think it's kind of clever. You know, it's stacked under a pyramid of beer cans. Who would think to look there, man? It's genius.
Well, the robber obviously did, so he might have been casing the joint, but also it's that thing where, you know, I would have thought, you know, if you've empty cans, maybe have them full.
Definitely. That's how you do it.
Or, you know, so maybe you just saw the top and realized there was no pull rings. I think, I remember these are the old classic pull top ones, so... Mm. Yeah, you just probably looked and went, why are all these empty cans there?
Or, well, if we're going with our headcanon that this couple lives just behind or above this convenience store,
yeah,
just leave it there, man. Why are you going to have it in the store?
Yeah, this just might be, you know, I was going to say, it might be recycling day. This is the 80s. There's no such thing as recycling.
Yeah, that's... When was recycling invented? After I was born, I think.
Well, this is about the same, roughly around the time where, you know, environmentalism was becoming a major issue. Now that I think about it, like, global warming was becoming a big issue, you know. In America, I know there was the big thing about the garbage yacht. So that was also what kind of helped, you know, spur on some of the environmental stuff.
Here we go. A considerable investment in recycling occurred in the 1970s due to rising energy costs. Recycling aluminium uses only 5% of energy required by virgin production. So, yeah, 70s, okay. Yeah.
Okay, I've been proven completely... No, okay, I'm just going from memory. I don't have these notes.
Also, it depends if things were different in Australia or if there was just a particular push in the 90s. I feel like there was a huge push in the 90s.
There was definitely a huge push, particularly. There's always has been some pushes, and we've seen more and more recently, you know, especially with, like, you know, the energy crisis and, like, using recycling as a way to combat that. And
now I refer to the 70s as the malaise era, which is what they call it in cars. You know, what, it was a dark time for car manufacturers.
Yeah, that was a thing going on in America, especially in America, because, you know, you had the whole, like,
energy crisis, fuel shortages, all of that.
But you also had the Japanese car thing coming along in the 80s as well, where, like, the manufacturing was starting to be... There's a Michael Keaton movie called Gung Ho, or in Australia called Working Class Man, because they had to crowbar the Jimmy Barnes music into it. And it's pretty much all about that. That's where you get feeding into, like, a lot of cyberpunk, is also the whole, you know, worried about the invasion of Japanese culture in America. Also,
Back to the Future makes reference to that, where Doc Brown's like, "It's Japanese. What is this shit?" You know.
Yeah, that was very much an 80s thing going on in America. Like this whole, like, let's face it, there's still a lot of anti-Asian things going on in America, particularly now.
I need to get back on studying Japanese. You reminded me. It's been a few months. I've taken some time off.
One thing I did like about this is, like, Elvira did the smart thing, and she actually pressed the emergency button, which, of course, pinged the robot cop. We get the first full reveal, pretty much, in the scene.
Yes. Oh, my God. RoboCop knows how to enter a goddamn room. Holy shit. Fuck. It's just like this Miami Vice neon pink lighting behind him. He pulls both doors open at the same time. And it's just something about the way he moves in that particular moment. It's kind of casual, and it's so...
I know.
It's kind of unlike RoboCop, the way he moves here on out. But there, it's just like, nah. Bitches, here I am.
I don't know what order this was shot in, but this could be, you know, by this stage, maybe Peter Weller had gotten so used to the costume that when they finally record this, it's just like, yeah, make fucking way.
Yeah, it does feel like he's quite comfortable with it, and he's not afraid of, you know, ruining it or anything like that. But it's also very efficient. I could see RoboCop just doing, well, hey, this is the easiest way to enter this room.
Yeah. Well, one thing I do like about this this is probably the thing you see this more than anything else, where there's those close-ups of the suit and the bullets dinging off him, then leaving like the carbon scoring and stuff like that. So maybe this could have been one of those things where they shot it later on in the production, so they could mess around with the suit. I mean, you know, there is the messed up suit, but those were specifically built. They didn't just take the RoboCop suit and drill fucking holes into it. Well, they could have. Maybe we'll find out later. That's what exactly what they did. They had one robot suit. They had to destroy it incrementally.
They had to drill pee holes in it, like in the Universal Studios kit.
You look like crap.
Fuck you, kid.
Yeah. If anyone's not aware, the Universal Studios kit that you could go and meet Knight Rider Co. Yeah. Yep. Kids would get so excited that they kept weeing. So they just drilled holes in the bottom.
They had to replace the original suede seats with plastic covered seats so they could clean it more efficiently, because kids just got so excited their bladders went.
But if you're concerned about that kid, he's doing just fine. He's with the Knight Rider historians. He's met Jay Leno. So, you know, he's living a pretty good life now.
I know, it's the life of a celebrity car, you know.
Yeah, you know, that car, better comeback than Robert Downey Jr.
Anyway, I was...
I don't think Robert Downey Jr. ever got pissed on, I'm just going to say, you know. I mean, he could have, you know, it was the 90s, I don't
the
know.
The 90s, yes! He was also in jail for a time, you know.
Plenty of opportunities for this to have occurred.
Yeah. To quote Office Work, you either got to lay someone out or you got to become someone's bitch.
Yeah, exactly. So there's our Knight Rider reference. So there's one down. We'll try and get our other references in.
Well, I was looking at the IMDb for these three people in the scene and trying to look for some Star Trek references, and, there isn't any.
Well, shit.
But you might like this. So the character of the thug in this is called Hophead.
Mm-hmm.
This is in the script, and it's also in the credits.
That seems like a Mad Max character.
He is one of those guys that's done, like, a ton of work. He's, like, you know, he's always playing a thug or a heavy. I think he's done stunt work, you know.
One of them guys.
Yeah, he's definitely one of them guys in movies and all that. But the one credit that popped out in front of me, and I had to tell you, he was in Airwolf, your favorite TV show.
Oh, hell yeah. Do you know what episode?
Let me just look. His name is Mike Moroff, and he was working all the way up to 2008. He's still alive as best as I can find, but he's done like a ton of different work. I'm just scrolling to the 80s and it's just like forever and just
Control F.
He was in the episode called Break In at Santa Paula in 1986.
I don't think I'm up to that one yet.
Yeah, he's done A-Team, he's done Dukes of Hazzard, he's in Scarface, other classic... He was in MacGyver.
Oh, yeah, maybe. I'm only, like, 9 episodes into that. I am no longer able to connect with regular people anymore, because all I want is 1980s popular culture, all my music, all my movies, all my TV shows. You know, I started this Instagram project, Greatest Regeneration, just for fun, just see where it would take me. Now, I've actually traveled back in time and don't know what you future people are talking. What's a fucking podcast? I don't know. Where am I? I'm terrified.
You're on the internet wireless. Which is different to wireless internet.
I see. Yeah, so, like, my therapist was recommending some show. My mom's been recommending these shows. I've got a few friends who are like, have you watched this latest thing or whatever it is? And I try and watch it and go, yeah, I just... It doesn't have a prototype attack neon helicopter, you know? It doesn't have any neon. Where is the new wave? Where is Don Johnson? I just don't care. I'm sorry.
No, well, the only thing new I can tell you that's got Don Johnson in it is Knives Out, and that's really good. But it's not a TV series.
I do love Knives Out. I just watched it because Don Johnson's in it, so I felt less scared. I was like, I recognize you.
It's also got Daniel Craig and a lot of other phenomenally good actors. Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah, Jamie Lee Curtis. There we go. Oh, I've just watched The Fog. Yep, I know her. Yeah.
There are a lot of classic 80s actors in there. Oh, hell Jesus. Yeah. One of
The '80s was just a really good time, and I missed out. But it's good that it's all preserved. I can go back and experience it again.
You missed out on the quirk of fate by not being born yet, so yeah, there you go.
God damn it.
The great thing about modern media is that we have preserved a lot of this. I was going to say good stuff, but we've preserved a lot of this stuff.
We preserved everything. And whether it's good or bad, well, you know what? They can't all be winners.
Yeah.
I mean, like the pilot of Airwolf, Jesus Christ. Woo! Rape culture was normalized back then.
Yeah, I've definitely not seen that. And last time I saw Airwolf, I was first run in England, so yeah. Anyway, so I was looking at the other IMDb, and the mom and pop are Marjorie Ryan-Nielsen and Joe Livingston, respectively. They didn't even have much credits, so there's really not much to say about them, except that Marjorie died almost a year ago, in May the 10th. I didn't see what it was from. I'm assuming it was natural causes. Old Pops died in 2012. But apparently he was, like, big in stage actor.
Oh, right.
There you go. Not many movie credits, but probably, you know, doing well on the theatre.
So, not a lot of dialogue in this minute, but fuck me, is it iconic?
I do have a note for that.
Yeah? I'd love to know.
So, in the audio commentary, Ed talks about that Paul gave this guy... Because I think in the script, it just says... let me just double check. He just says, fuck me. Sorry, I just had to make sure I got that right. So he just says, fuck me, but apparently just got him to keep saying, fuck me. And as he was going, and it just became like... fucking brilliant as it kept going.
Yeah, it's one of those the rule, I think we've talked about it before, like the rule of repetition or whatever it is, where you know, the first few times, oh okay, yeah. Or it could be initially funny and then it builds up, where I think in this case you're like, oh yeah, okay.
Yeah, what else would your reaction be? You know, like, get the fuck out of here, like, oh, fuck me. And I think he realizes that guy's a cop, I've been caught doing a crime. Oh, fuck.
Yeah, I mean, actually, really put yourself in that scenario for a minute of, you see, not a man in a robot costume, you see what could be only described as a cyborg. Just imagine, you know, very convincing technology. That would just wig you right out. You would be like, just, yeah, fuck me. Oh, fuck, you know?
I actually really do like how the novelization talks about it. The Hophead, seeing that Alvarez staring over his shoulder, spun around to see Robo crash the doors of the store. The robber froze. What the hell is that? He blurted. It was a cop, but it wasn't a cop. It was a machine, but it looked like a man. He pointed his rifle at the cop. Robo wasn't impressed. We can do this one of two ways, Robo announced. I can't do a Murphy, but either way. Robo announced gently, the easy way or the hard way?
The easy way or the hard way.
Yeah. How fucking cliche is that?
Dead or alive, you're coming with me.
That's a better line. How many times have we heard the easy way or the hard way? Well, they've done some nice censoring in this book, because instead of saying fuck me, it says screw me. And then Robo shrugged and says, we'll do it the hard way.
Yeah. Very hard. Hard like a Robocock.
We're not there yet. Else it's a very short episode.
Why is this fucking joke still going? I hate myself.
Oh, well, we can come up with something new. We'll figure it out.
No, it's eternal.
So interestingly, in the script, there's actually supposed to be another character. There was supposed to be a kid who was shoplifting some candy and witnesses the entire thing. And it's like, basically the scene ends with the kid going, wow, I want to be a cop now.
Yeah. Gee willikers.
Yeah, it's like, it's really cringy. It's like, it doesn't add anything, and I think it was probably best to cut it.
If they had planned this out properly, it could have been the kid from Robocop 2, and in that moment, he's like, man, you know what? Fuck the police. I'm going to be a criminal.
Fuck the popo, yeah. Well, I think it's like, yeah, we're looking at it now in 2021, you know, after some of the shady shit the cops been doing in America, and we're kind of there going, yeah, not... Let's face it, this is kind of propaganda, this movie.
Oh, it's
still showing the cops in a very positive light, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's more like, you know, don't blame the cops, blame the system sort of thing.
Yeah, and we have a specific enemy, and that's, we have OCP being the guys that are fucking the cops around, so...
Mm.
Well, it's also a capitalist critique is very, very appropriate for 2021 as well, but, yeah.
I'm really fascinated by privatized law groups or companies or anything like that, organizations, I guess. Yeah, I was thinking about OCP, I was thinking about, like, the Phoenix Foundation and MacGyver, or Flag, or the Firm and Airwolf, Flag from, not right, I don't know if I said that out loud, that's because I'm so used to just saying Flag and people know what I mean. Yeah, all these sort of, especially 80s law agencies who work above the law, I was looking into it, there aren't really any real-world cases of that, although in the military you certainly do have these projects that are kind of allowed to do whatever they want. It's all...
Oh, yeah, private military organizations are fucking rife with abuse, especially over in the Middle East, and...
I learned that from Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah, well, soldiers typically hate private military contract.
Yeah.
Mostly because... they don't hold to standards. They don't hold to the same standards as military personnel, like, you know, Geneva Conventions and all that. They hold to none of that stuff. A lot of them tend to be ex-military washouts, so people who weren't fit to be a soldier.
Mm.
And they tend to be the fucking worst people you can put on a battlefield. And also, they tend to do crimes.
Deadpool was a mercenary. Yeah, so you got mercenaries, you got bounty hunters, you got bail bondsmen, you've got private detectives, and all of these guys don't exactly have the best reputations.
No. It's funny how media tries to lionize a lot of these characters, and,
especially in the 80s, all these characters, you know, Airwolf, Knight Rider, MacGyver, all our heroes are people operating above the law, but they're the good ones. Mm. They're the good eggs who just... they've got a good moral compass. You can trust them, mostly. I don't... Stringfellow, I don't know. If Dominic's not around, I don't trust him to do the right thing.
This does feed into this whole idea of the public perception of police and police... force. So the Bob Chipman Renegade Cut, they did a series about how cops in the media, I think it could be Bob Chipman, and it was about how, like, you look at the first depictions.
What a great name.
Yeah. Started off with, like, how throughout media, particularly movies, how the depictions of cop, and you look at the original depictions of cop, the Keystone Cops was, like, if not one, none of the first depictions in film of cops, and they were all bumbling idiots.
Hmm.
And that was kind of how people kind of saw them. And then you get this whole thing where the cops in Hollywood, you know, how fucking corrupt Hollywood was back in, like, the golden era, and, like, celebrities were fucking murdering people and all sorts of shit because they were just let off the leash because they were fucking celebrities.
Yep.
And the cops would basically say to the movie studios, yeah, you know, you do us a solid and we'll cover you up, you know, stop calling us, you know, incompetent dicks. And so Hollywood starts to shift away from, you know, bumbling idiot to a bit more serious, you know, these are good cops. And then you get shit like Dragnet, where it's just so much propaganda, it's not funny.
Yeah.
And we definitely see it in the 80s.
Yeah. So, we've got a purple tint going on in this scene, and I quite like that, because you so rarely get that sort of colour in film. Mostly, you know, of the green tint and the blue tints, in The Matrix. Yeah. Everyone does that sort of sepia, the Michael Bay thing. Oh, it's either sepia or blue, or both together.
Yeah, basically orange and blue color tones, yes. Yeah. That's a big thing for, like, the last, pretty much since Michael Bay, so, like, almost 20 years.
Purple is great. More purple, please.
What I love is that you can actually see that color purple kick off, like, the highlights on RoboCop's costume. Really good in this as well.
Definitely.
Those blues and purples. Oh, beautiful.
And more so in the sequel. I like the paint job in the sequel. I think it's great.
We will get to that. We talked about it last time.
I know. I don't remember at what stage I started referencing Alien Covenant in Prometheus, but I don't think it was this early. another note is that eggs were harmed in the making of this scene, because you see these egg cartons fall on top of the robber as he's thrown into the fridge. They fall very lightly, none of them open, so clearly there's nothing inside of them. At least put something to weigh him down, guys, come on.
I love the crazy amount of product placement in this particular scene. There's always like close-ups, like there's like a Johnny Walker bottle blowing up. There's like packs of chips and stuff getting blown up. And part of me wonders, okay, maybe did they get paid for a lot of this stuff? I mean, that's a thing where Hollywood recoups a lot of costs by product placement. But you know, your product is getting blowed up by a crazy guy trying to rob a store. Do you want to pay for that? They have to go. They had to get permission, though. They had to get permission.
Yeah, I'm always interested about the logistics of that.
Mm.
I was thinking about making a little short film just to see, can I do it? Could I film something in my apartment and it's just me? Or maybe a friend of mine offered to do the voice of we're thinking maybe he could be the AI. So there's two characters, but he doesn't even have to physically be there. And every time I try to write it, I just go, oh, then I could have an exterior shot of, oh, fuck. Okay, so if I go outside, then you got to deal with noise. Am I allowed to film here? Are people going to be walking in on the scene? Is this, oh, my God. Yeah, it's just...
So copyright's a bit interesting. If you're outside in public, you can literally shoot anything you want in a photography sense.
Mm.
I wouldn't recommend, say, shooting your apartment. But, if you're shooting somebody else's property... typically in movie sense, you should ask permission. Like if you want to shoot someone's house, you need to get permission of the property owner.
Mm. Yeah, it's just the moment you step outside of your apartment, it becomes incredibly difficult.
Yeah, so it's one of those weird things. You're legally allowed to shoot anything you want, but if you want to use it, that's when it gets really tricky.
When you're involved with a major Hollywood production, I assume, you as a director, you don't have to worry about scouting locations or are we allowed to shoot here? What's the logistics? Someone else does that, you know?
Yes.
Ah, must be lovely.
I mean, some directors might want to be more hands-on a lot of that stuff, but for the most part, they have a guy doing recce and, they have a guy doing the legal stuff,
There's a reason why Matrix fan films were the biggest thing in fan films back in the day, in the early days of the internet, because all you needed was to get a bunch of mates in all black, and then you go to a car park or you go to a train station. It's something that's public where the locations are so easy to scout for that one.
I do like doing location recces. That's actually a thing I've enjoyed doing it for film, and I do particularly like doing it for photography because I can take my camera, go to location, start shooting and finding shots, and then trying to match them later.
Yeah.
There's always a degree of logistics and fuck aroundery with all that type of stuff. They have to have gone to every single one of these, probably literally every single thing in that store that they shot on film and went, okay, can we get usage rights? And hey, maybe you can give us some money.
Yeah. There was someone who just spent probably weeks just arranging what products they could put on display in this store, which it's probably not even a real location. It's probably just, a set completely.
Most of the stuff in Robocop was shot on real locations, so yeah. Mm. Yeah, this was probably one of those places in downtown. Where the fuck was it again? Tulsa or
somewhere.
That was UHF.
Yeah.
It's been so many episodes since we researched that.
Yeah.
But yeah, someplace in on location and just was like, yeah, this looks like a good store. We'll just, pay the... they probably shot this fucking midnight or something like that outside probably. Of operating hours. Just to, again, that's probably why it's a night shoot because, this is the same reason why, in Clerks, the reason why the roller shutters are stuck is because Kevin Smith shot the entire thing after work at the night time and he couldn't have daylight coming in, so he wrote a thing to say the roller shutters were stuck.
That's clever. Yeah, those things. I
love it.
Yeah, it's great.
Mm. So I do have one quick note when we're talking about product placements, because we get the classic thank you for your cooperation line. I love that.
Yes, beautiful.
You just wrecked the entire store. Oh, yes, the bad guy did most of the stuff, but you kind of did punch the bad guy into a freaking cooler full of, stuff. There's a sign behind his head, I only noticed it this time, that says Silver Bullet. And I went, is that a thing?
Yeah, I noticed that.
So I did some digging and trying to think of, what's the logo? Because there's this thing underneath and I couldn't quite make it out. It's on a weird angle. It turns out that Silver Bullet was a thing in association with Coors Light, a beer.
Huh.
And I found a t-shirt with that exact logo on it. So yeah, I can confirm that it's definitely a beer advertisement, but I love the idea of, like, you know, are they trying to say that RoboCop is the silver bullet?
Ah.
Yeah.
It is.
I don't know. But I thought it was a very interesting visual thing, and I thought, yeah, that's kind of neat. If that could have been completely unintentional, but I hope it wasn't. Paul, we know you're listening. Please let us know.
Oh, man, I just love just old school advertisements and stuff. I guess Vaporwave is completely built on that. There's something about it.
Yeah.
I love my Pontiac Firebird t-shirt. I'm not big on t-shirts, but yes, that and my Miami Vice t-shirts. They're my two favorites.
Is it pink?
It's white with the pink and blue Miami Vice.
It should be a pink t-shirt so you can wear it underneath your white jacket.
I do wear it under a white jacket. How full do you? Crockett. Yeah, I go full Crockett, man. Although last time I wore that top and I had the jacket, but forgot to take my socks off, so I feel very bad about that. Forgive me, Crockett, for I have sinned.
I forgot the socks were a thing, or at least weren't a thing.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, basically this minute just so beautifully and effectively conveys what RoboCop is all about, what he's capable of, how efficient and badass he is. I love it. Iconic.
This is one of those scenes that almost springs to mind when you're thinking of the great scenes in this film, you know. When you think about it, the great scene of this film starts off at the Orion logo and ends at RoboCop, you know, 93 minutes later.
Yeah. No, this whole movie is just perfection. And we have never run out of things to say. I've never watched a minute and just gone, oh, this is boring.
34 minutes in, and part of me is just there going, oh, God, maybe I'm running out of shit to say. And then it's just like, no, I keep coming up with funky ass shit every single day.
We are finding new things that that's why I love doing movies by minute, is that I am able to appreciate this movie that I already love on a level that I never would have noticed otherwise. They really do make every single one of those 90 minutes count. And I think that's something we don't see so much in, especially now. I feel like they just shove an extra half hour into movies, RoboCop remake, for no good reason. No, you should treat every single one of those minutes as if it was the most important thing, you know?
Editing has almost become a lost art in regards to big blockbuster budget films. Now it's ridiculous. Like, yeah, I completely agree with you on that.
Did we want to move on to gaslighting RoboCop?
I don't have much else to say, but I forgot what this scene is. Oh, okay, yeah, let's go on to it.
Alex, how do you feel?
I feel fine, Dr. Norton.
All right, this minute begins with Norton saying, you have to understand the reality of your situation, and ends with a close-up on Robo Flag's pulsating brain.
My only comment is, the scene we've been waiting for.
This is the one good scene in this entire movie. Holy shit. Although I have to say, now that we've been going through it closely, we have noticed... oh my god, no, don't restart now. Fuck off. Oh my... My laptop was like, hey, we've got some important updates. Do you want to restart now? No! Definitely don't do that. Okay, now it's got me paranoid. But anyway, we've already recorded the important RoboCop, so...
yeah.
Getting back to
it. No, but this is the scene we... Okay. I have issues with this for a technical reason. Yeah. Not related to the actual filmmaking, but I know you've been champing at the bit to get onto this, so please go hog wild.
So I was going to say that in the earlier minutes that we've covered so far, we have noticed potential. We've noticed that there are interesting things happening with, like, Murphy's wife, for example. There's potential. But this one, I think, just stands out so beautifully on its own as an incredibly evocative, claustrophobic, panic-inducing scene. It really, it's powerfully disturbing. And sends home, I think, for the first time, the reality of such a transformation.
Yes, definitely. I'd even, to a certain degree, kind of think, of all the things I think this remake got right, okay, I won't say the original movie needed this particular scene.
No.
If there's anything we can kind of say, what could we reverse engineer back into RoboCop? the sheer scope of how much physical human is left in RoboCop. I love this scene for that.
Yeah.
In fact, I think there's a little bit too much, but I've already talked about my lung issue.
I mean, it is a distinct and memorable image. It's iconic. If there's anything to be taken from this film as iconic, that this is it. And I think it would have been great if they could have committed to that. There's a word for it, or on TV Tropes, I've definitely read that article, but it's not revisionist, but it's more like, you know, you're doing a more grounded remake, and so you are taking that story to its realistic conclusion. And so if you did play this like that, you played it just dead straight, and there's no satire, it is strictly focusing on the, I guess, the medical, the political... Mm. All of that.
If this reboot had been actually a bit more of a horror than a comedy action, you know, really kind of laying into just the existential crisis of being fucking RoboCop.
When it comes to cyborgs in fiction, especially in horror, they're usually the monster that are attacking the heroes. We've never had any story really delve into that biological horror. You know, I'm surprised not even, you know, someone like Cronenberg, who he kind of plays around with body transformation, but never technological. Giga collaborated on a few scripts back in the day that would have involved that, but they never went anywhere. So it's a real shame, because I think, like Tetsuo the Iron Man? I haven't actually seen it, but... And that's more abstract. It's not... Yeah.
My brain went Tetsuo went from Akira.
Akira, yeah.
You know, that was body horror in a whoa kind of different way.
Well, that actually does play with these concepts, especially... Tetsuo losing his arm, and then he gets the robot arm, and yeah.
Yeah. That's an image that will be ever forever burned into my brain when it's like, you know... Especially when it's like, it spurts out and starts covering... Oh, yeah, that movie's phenomenal.
Yeah, we saw that recently on the big screen. It was so good.
So good, yes.
If anyone out there who's even vaguely interested in anime or animation, definitely watch Akira on the big screen.
That should be like your baby's first hardcore anime.
They don't make them like they used to. I tried, you know, practicing Japanese. I was watching a lot of anime. And just picking whatever, just seeing what's out there. No, the modern stuff is all aimed at very young kids, and I hate it all. And 90s, and 80s and 90s is where it's at. That's the golden age.
It's funny because what made that stuff break through into America, apart from when they've just like they recut it and revoiced it and turned it into things like Robotech, but it was a lot of the hardcore violent stuff that kind of got across to America, because it was just unlike anything that Americans had seen.
Yeah.
Like, Americans have this concept of animation as being, you know, like, the most violent it gets is freaking Masters of the Universe, but it's...
Yeah, I mean, you can count on one hand, you know, heavy metal, Fritz the Cat, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. But they're also, like, seen as, like, one-offs or underground or, like, you know, that's not a cartoon. That's, you know, that's just... avant-garde bullshit art.
But getting back to this minute, I think cyborgs are so often depicted as, oh, it's just a very easy transformation, and it's just like, oh, now I'm right as rain, there's no adjustment period, and I think Darth Vader, especially in the prequel trilogy, that's as close as we get to someone truly trying to come to grips with what they've lost, and a lot of that's in the expanded lore rather than, you know, 5 seconds at the end of Revenge of the Sith.
Oh, that scene is probably the most cringeworthy scene in the entire Star Wars canon, except for maybe I Wish I Could Wish Away These Feelings.
And Snyder's Justice League, I actually quite like his version of Cyborg, and I felt his struggle. I've kind of stood on both sides of that, I guess.
I almost wish they did more with Cyborg in the sense of, like...
He suddenly became the most compelling character in that movie. Well, can we call it a movie, or is it just a series of scenes strung together with a loosely coherent narrative?
No, I call it a vanity project.
Vanity project. Yeah. So, yeah, Zack Snyder's four-hour masturbatory imaginarium magnum opus. Electric Boogaloo. So... we don't see the real graphic stuff. So, again, still not quite getting there as to what are you really losing in this transformation.
No, that was in Batman versus Superman.
And actually, I think it'd be interesting. Ghost in the Shell sort of does this, but the thing is, Motoko Kusanagi, the Major, she lost her body, as far as we can tell, when she was very young. So... all she's ever known is life as basically a robot. So I think it would be quite interesting to see a woman go through this, because I think, well, not every woman wants kids, but if a woman wanted children and then became a cyborg, what does that mean? And I've never seen that explored, because I think most writers are men. Most screenwriters are especially men. So they don't want to get into that. It's very biological. It's very feminine.
This is when... the thing with, like, Lewis becoming this RoboCop 2 as a modern idea that we think about, like, oh, man, that would have been freaking amazing. And I must admit, I'm glad they didn't do that in hindsight, in the sense of, like, oh, yeah, they probably would have fucked that up for RoboCop 2.
Yeah.
We've hit up against this, like, of all the characters to put in the robot suit in this movie, Alex Murphy is possibly the worst one.
Yeah, I mean, even in terms of personality and stuff, why would this company be looking at him and going, yep, he's the one? We're not showing that scene. We see the scene where they're looking around for all these other guys, and they're like, oh, no, he's too black, no, he's too fat.
Yes! You know?
But angry white man who could... possibly be difficult to control. And we're seeing already, he's difficult to control. Yeah. What did you expect, dickhead?
Yeah, I'm so glad all these robotics never work when someone's emotional. I am going to keep on harping on about that because you set it up in the movie!
Yeah, and again, something they're kind of setting up is how grounded and realistic... and the body horror is going to be, but it isn't. It's just swept under the rug, but...
Well, even cinematography speaking, you know, you're talking about the sense of isolation and enclosure and stuff like that. Okay, I do like this scene cinematography. It doesn't invoke those things. And to give credit where credit's due, Joel Kinnaman at least does emote a lot of that in this particular scene.
I think his performance is really great in this. It's very vulnerable. It's not... you know, I think that a lot of, especially male actors, have this tendency to be like, you know, when they're upset, they'll just, like, do it in a really manly way. It's like, oh God, no, oh, no. And it's like, you know, he's like, oh, holy crap, oh, fuck, oh, God, no. Like, it's, it sounds like he's about to either pass out or throw up or both, you know?
Yeah. Like, I think this is could have been that scene where, if, like, maybe him truly realizing... what's happening to him is why his body's shutting down. At least the, you know, that disconnect between the cybernetics and his emotions. The cinematic language they're missing.
This is such a fascinating situation because he has been freed from the body, technically.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he's trapped and he's panicking like he's trapped because he's in this indestructible, eternal body, but it's one that can be controlled by someone else. So it's there's so many great themes. This is why I think we need more, you know, robots and cyborgs and stuff in fiction, because I think people are just barely scratching the surface when it comes to robots. It's all, you know, bloody Cyberdyne taking over the planet, whatever.
Or it's I'm just trying to be human, like a good little Pinocchio.
Yeah. Or with cyborgs, it's just, oh, you know, I've lost my arm. Cool, now I got a super strong arm, or whatever it is. There's just no consequences.
Yeah.
Like, you tend to forget cyborgs are cyborgs. In Ghost in the Shell, I think that's probably one of the best franchises for cyborgs, because it really, and especially because it's animated, it can go there, and it can show you all of that stuff. There's some... oh my God, there's some brilliant concepts, especially in Standalone Complex. I don't want to go on too much of a tangent, but have you seen it?
No,
I haven't. Oh, there's one where there is this cinema in one guy's mind, so I don't even think he has a body anymore, but it's this...
Oh, wow.
So his consciousness exists as a cinema. He's a filmmaker who died and now makes movies in his imagination. And so these other cyborgs...
Oh, I would love to do that.
...hook up to him, and they can watch his movies. I think that's basically the gist of it. You know, Ghost in the Shell, very complex plots, and I watched this many years ago, but that one's just stood out to me. It's just... Just the feeling of it stayed with me, and it really pushes the concept of cybernetics and what is human, what are you left with when you take everything away.
Mm.
And so, Duncan, on this very show, he talked about it a lot, and he's got a few short stories that kind of play with that idea. But just how long is it before you start either going crazy, you just lose who you are, because... You are your body.
Holy shit. Sorry, I just realized the only thing analogous to that I can think of, just the idea of fiction without it being specifically cyborg, is essentially, well, these well-written immortal-style things, like long-lived vampires. Or my brain was actually going to say, like, Highlander.
I was actually thinking of vampires, because I thought a lot of cyborgs kind of have that thing of... Oh, it sucks, and it's so tragic, and I live forever, and... Yeah, no, that's not the interesting part.
No, I was thinking, like, they do touch upon this in the only Highlander movie that I ever made,
yes.
Called Highlander,
mm-hmm.
And just that thing where, like, you know, Connor McLeod, he clearly cares about this female love interest. It's been a long time since I watched the film, and I just can't remember the goddamn character's name.
Yeah, I don't remember, but we all know, the woman who ages rapidly in the beginning.
Yeah. And it's that thing where he knows that being in love is a hard thing for him to do, because she can spend his entire life with him. He can't spend his entire life with her. He's essentially, existence is so prolonged, you know, head choppy off, you know, permitting, that he has gone through this emotional pain, and it's something that self-protective in a certain way. He doesn't want to expose himself like that again.
Yeah.
And those are good concepts. Like, how do you deal with other people throughout your life? And apart from, like, yeah, the one little girl he saves, and who is now an older woman, you know, a platonic relationship, but is all of his other friends are essentially immortals themselves, because that's the only people he can relate to.
Mm.
Goddamn, Highlander's a great film. It's a shame they never made a sequel.
It's amazing that no one's done a Movies by Minute of Highlander, so maybe...
I thought there was.
No, I don't. Remember we were looking that up and we're like, no, there's no Highlander. Or maybe... maybe
okay. We'll will it into existence.
Sorry, I gotta know now, because I think we did look it up.
I think we did look it up.
No. No.
Damn.
So that's free real estate, fellas.
Yeah. Get onto it. We want to hear it.
Yeah.
And we want a guest on it.
Yeah.
I just realized it should be called There Could Be Only 1 Minute.
Yes! Fuck! We just come up with the best name. Yeah, no, we have to do it now. I'm sorry.
Ah, oh, shit.
I'm pretty sure brains don't pulsate like that.
I don't think so either.
That would be worrying. I guess
blood vessels might, but...
Yeah, oof. Why is it doing that? Why did someone... It's a request that be animated like that. And yes, doors and mirrors that like slide up in or out of spaces, they look cool. They make absolutely no sense. You would need, you would basically be a tiny room with this humongous space around it where all your shit is stored so that you can retrieve it. And it's just, this doesn't make any, unless you got some kind of hammer space or little stargates everywhere. What are you doing?
Well, you think about it, like, the bottom of the floor has all the mechanisms for the arm, so you have to have a place underneath the floor specifically for a pane of glass, and it probably has to clean it as it's going up, so there's got to be brushes and all sorts of things like there. Oh, God, that was dumb.
Yeah. All I could imagine is, you know, they've got those flat screen TVs that you can just bend and all of that, because they don't need the backlighting anymore. So that the mirror that he looks in, I think, is maybe it rolls up. Maybe that's the only thing I could think of.
Maybe it's just got a maybe it's no, because it is an actual mirror, because it it moves as, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it'd be interesting though if you get to a point where you can have materials that can go soft and then rigid like that. So kind of like Batman's cape in Batman Begins, you know, you put a current through it and it becomes solid again. So that's the only way I could see it working.
Future mirror tech,
yeah, or any object that's stored below or above or in the walls or wherever. Yeah, so there's a very thin space. Fifth Element has so much of that.
Yeah, but Fifth Element is also one of those things that it's set crazy amounts of time in the future, and so, like, things are absurd.
Yes, I mean, it is supposed to be absurd. Corbin Dallas, do you think he's named after Captain Dallas and Alien? It never occurred to me until now.
I don't know. Maybe he's a descendant.
Oh, confirmed.
I don't know. It depends how far ahead in the future the Fifth Element is relative to modern day and relative to Alien.
Ah, but it's in the French future. So.
Ah, oh, there you go. It's the goddamn French. Is it? They have the best futures.
I know. So, do we have any more notes?
I'm pretty much spent.
All right. You can find me at travandesigns.com, TRAVAAN. You can find me at Alien Prequels by Minute on Facebook, and that's where you will get all my podcast updates and what have you. We recently did the Alien Day special reviewing Alien 3. Yes. That was a lot of fun.
That was really interesting. I really enjoyed the deep dive you did into that. Both you and Clara from Studio Yutani.
Yes. I had not watched Alien 3 in so long and I'd put it off. And it was so revelatory to watch it with adult eyes going, hang on, there was a hidden gem here all along. And yet, I remembered the film, I remembered what it looked like, I remembered all the plot beats, but to watch it as an adult is a totally different thing, and that, it blows my mind, because I think so many people must go, I remember something perfectly clearly, I don't need to look at it again. No, trust me, you do. Your stupid monkey brain ain't that good.
Well, I've always been a defender of that film, but I really must admit I'd love to go back and rewatch it, see if it holds up to my, you know, teenage brain. And I would love to see the alternate cut that people keep talking about. And was it the assembly cut?
Yeah.
I heard there was a director's cut. I heard it wasn't that good.
Well, it's not a director's cut. So it's directed by I think he's a producer or something like that. So he worked very closely, but he wasn't. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I'd love to go back in. I'm not sure if it's on the Blu-ray or not. I really should get back. I should just binge-watch the original Alien trilogy again one day.
Hell yeah. All right, where we can find you?
Oh, you can find me at Fandom Crossing, where I do YouTube stuff and Kung Pao into the minute. But because I've been doing a lot of photography, I'm going to plug my brand new Facebook page at Helios Photos. So go check that shit out.
Yeah, I saw that.
Posted a shitload of photos from the WA model exhibition. And because, you know, it's relevant, there's a lot of, like, sci-fi stuff, but unfortunately no robots or robot cops.
Sad.
We have to rectify that. Beyond that, check us out on Simplecast, Spotify, Google, and what's the other one? Apples, and
Instagram.
Yeah, check us out on the Instagrams, the Facebooks, all the social medias. I don't think we have Tinder yet, but maybe we can work on that.
Oh, yes, let's find RoboCop a boyfriend or a girlfriend.
Yeah. Or, you know, a very, very romantic toaster. I don't know where I was going with that, but until next time.
Haptic feedback dildo, 6 variable settings, dishwasher safe. I'd buy that for $1.
Gotta make sure it's dishwasher safe.
I was writing, like, what are some cliche things they say in ads? I went, dishwasher safe, yeah.
Thank you.